So, Marquesas, how far away is that? How isolated are we?
2,500 kilometers.
2,500 kilometers. And that's around the closest?
That's the closer piece of land human people living. We have other islands like 500
but
kilometers.
But they're uninhabited.
But they are uninhabited. Yeah, okay. It's for scientists' studies and not human people. We know they live there. It's Marquesas is one of the closer ones west on that direction.
Yeah. Towards New Zealand.
Yes. Chile is 3,800 kilometers. Yeah, 5 hours in plane.
We are quite alone out here.
Welcome to Jump Podcast. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and experience the world outside your comfort zone and to do big, courageous things with your one life. Let this show be a source of advice and inspiration, and remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. This episode is supported by Osprey, my go-to luggage brand for everything since 2015, and by Oboz Footwear, my feet's ride-or-die adventure shoe brand. So stay tuned for more from both of them. And of course, we're supported by Jump Adventures and our own collection of epic adventure itineraries to Patagonia and beyond. Let us send you on your dream adventure. You can find out more and browse trips at jumpadventures.com. All right, I have a fun update from the road today. I have been traveling in South America for the past several weeks, and while I'm currently in a very adorable studio in Chilean Patagonia, this episode is going to be about an adventure that I just had. I just went for the first time to Easter Island, also known as Rapa Nui. So if you're watching this, because remember, we are producing video podcasts now too, you can watch episodes at travelingjackie.com/watch. If you're watching this, you're currently seeing this adorable studio that I'm renting for the week while I'm in Patagonia for the Adventure Travel World Summit. But I am going to paint a picture for you of where I just came from. And once we get into the Rapa Nui experience, you're going to, if you're watching, you're going to see essentially a slideshow of videos and some photos from the trip as you listen to bring you onto the trip with me. So those of you listening, if you want to see what's being talked about here today, hop on over to travelingjackie.com/watch, check out episode 195 so you can have a visual experience to go with what you're hearing. So first of all, we are talking about Easter Island, which is a territory of Chile, but it's way out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, like a 5-hour flight from Santiago, Chile, and you can only fly there from Santiago de Chile. So it's sort of like going from the west coast of the U.S. out to Hawaii. It's similar. It's just way out there. And because of that, in the past decade that I have been traveling to and from and all throughout Chile, I have yet to go out to Easter Island because it's so remote, in the middle of nothing but big, blue, beautiful ocean. And it's a small island, which is actually kind of ironic because Rapa Nui in Rapa Nui language means big island. I just did a trip there with my friend Shannon, who was just traveling with me on my last Jump Adventures group trip of 2025 in Peru. After that was over, we flew down to Chile and went out to Easter Island for 3 nights, just about 4 days. And in this episode, I'm going to take you along for the ride and give you an audio tour of the island. So why Easter Island? I wanted to go there to learn about the moais, which are the giant head statues that I'm sure you can picture. I'm sure that you've seen them. They only exist there on that one island. And well, except for the ones that are in museums, you know, throughout the world, but they all came from that one place. And I wanted to go see them for myself and to learn about the culture that created them and the mysteries surrounding them. And I have definitely done that now. And I'm going to take you with me on my immersive tour of the island. But before we get there, I also want to mention a very important fact about Easter Island, which is that 90% of the Rapa Nui National Park, which means 90% of all the cool sites around the island, are accessible only if you have an official tour guide. So we went with a company called EcoChili. You can find them at ecochili.travel. And they made it so easy for us and have been so, so great to work with. Full disclosure here, they sponsored my trip there, and I am 100% confident in recommending them to you for Easter Island and beyond, because they are a bespoke travel design company that works in all of Chile and Argentina and Antarctica and Bolivia. They're going to be expanding here soon, I think, too. And pay attention, because there's a bonus in this for you, too. Essentially, I came to them with my idea of going to Easter Island, my preferences for lodging and sorts of activities that I wanted to do while there. And they created a complete 4-day itinerary for me, including taking care of my flights in and out of Santiago, private tours, lodging, activities, absolutely everything. They had me download an app which showed me my complete custom itinerary. It had booking numbers and national park entry tickets and everything that I would need. There are specific things you need to prove on the way out to Easter Island. You need to show to Chilean customs officers, and I had all of that. Park rangers, like everything was in one place. It was so easy. And I will say this, I'm an experienced traveler. I'm always on top of my flight check-ins and itineraries and everything. I keep everything really organized. But they sent me personal messages within the app to deliver me my boarding passes and make sure that I knew about my upcoming transfers and everything. Like, whoa. So, okay, I'm used to handling these things myself, but it was so nice to just be taken care of. They really go above and beyond and do an incredible job. And this is their normal. They do this for everyone. I did not receive any kind of special treatment. This is just what they do. And the word that keeps coming to mind when I think about how EcoChili handled this is just thorough. They were so very thorough that if you don't want to keep track of all your itinerary stuff like I do, or even if you do, but you don't have to, because they've got you. They just make it so easy, which was really great, because I was very busy leading up to this trip and I knew that I didn't have anything to worry about. And for the record, before I even started this trip, I knew it would be very easy to recommend them, because they set up everything just so efficiently and easily. And here's the part where there's something in it for you. And I'll share this again at the end of this episode, but if you guys want to go on a trip in Chile or Argentina or Bolivia or anywhere that EcoChili does trips, they can set it up for you. Any trip in Chile or Argentina, Bolivia. So think Easter Island, Atacama, Patagonia, wine country, Tierra del Fuego, Antarctica, salt flats, whatever it is. If you want a custom trip created, you can get 5% off of your final itinerary cost if you tell them that Traveling Jackie sent you, or that you heard it on Jump with Traveling Jackie podcast. There's no code, because they don't work with automatic booking. They work with you personally to build a trip according to what you want. But when you talk to the actual humans behind EcoChili, who speak great English, by the way, they will honor the 5% off if you tell them that Traveling Jackie sent you. So easy peasy, and you can thank me later, because I am sure you'll also be very impressed with their services. So be sure to check them out, ecochili.travel. And I'll share their contact info in the show notes as well. See some of the destinations and tours that they can create for you. Or you can message me and I'll set you up with them. Either way works. You can always find me at Traveling Jackie on Instagram or via my website, travelingjackie.com. So, okay. So EcoChili set my friend Shannon and I up with 3 nights there, which was perfect. And I want to say, if anything, I would say maybe 4 nights is better, because there's so much to see and do that if you have an extra night, you might also just have extra time to relax and really enjoy your beautiful hotel and surroundings. So yeah, I would say 3 to 4 nights is a perfect amount of time on the island. All of our tours were private, which is the norm on the island. It keeps things intimate, and I actually love that they do it that way. It feels so much more personal, and you really get to know your guide, which I really love. So we arrived to the airport, and our guide, Tokerau, that's his name, Tokerau, we'll explain what that means later. He met us with real flower leis, I actually asked if they had a word for that in the Rapa Nui language, and he just said, no, just kind of flower necklaces. So, I mean, we call them leis, which is a Hawaiian word, which is actually somewhat appropriate because all of these languages are connected. So, but anyway, we had real flower leis. They were beautiful. They smelled so good, and they made us feel so welcome. He took us to our hotel to settle in just enough to change and eat a delicious ceviche lunch. I mean, the seafood here is endless and delicious. And then he came back to get us, and we began our multi-day tour of Easter Island. So what you're about to hear is actual conversation from the trail, or sometimes the car, or sometimes the lunch table. I used my super handy, awesome little Rode mics to record a lot of our conversation as we went. So the idea here is to immerse you in Easter Island right along with us, to create a travel experience for you right where you are. You will notice that this production is far from perfect, but you know what? It's real. You're going to hear wind, occasional roosters, I'm sure, other people talking in the background, weed whackers. It was unbelievable how many of these sites had weed whackers going. But it just shows that they really care about maintaining these very special places. So yeah, this is the real deal as we are exploring Easter Island. So just assume that the breaks in convo were real breaks in convo. I've patched together the conversation we had over multiple days. So just please forgive the extra sounds or noticeable breaks in the conversation in advance, because, hey, it's all part of the adventure. So you'll hear in this episode some of what we learned over several days in several different locations around the island. So keep in mind that while this is a great overview, there were so many stories in between, so many things that I chose not to share, so that you'll still be encouraged to go and find out the rest for yourself, because you're definitely going to have a different experience there than I did. You may have a different guide, which comes with different background, different stories. So this is meant to be just sort of a taste. And today we are focusing on the moais, which are the big giant statues, where they came from, how they were carved, what they stood for, how they included archaeoastronomy, and some theories on how they were transported and why that part is still a mystery. If you are watching this episode on YouTube, you're going to see scenes from the island, from the many things that we did and the places that we went, which will sort of help create the visual experience for you. And if you are not watching, allow me to start, how about, by painting a picture of our balcony from our hotel, so that you can kind of imagine starting there and then going out into the car, into the countryside. We stayed at a hotel called Hare Uta, and we had a bungalow in a beautiful landscape. So imagine, this is so real, this is what we just did, walking into the room and seeing that gauzy white curtain out to the balcony and going through and overlooking just palm trees and a stone pool with some chairs laid out. Our hotel was sort of on a hill, and so we were up above overlooking the rest of the property. There were lots of plants and fruit trees and tall banana leaves that extended up to our wooden balcony that had giant tree trunks as the main supports, and all of the buildings on the property had thatched roofs. So it was very, very tropical island feeling. And we had on our little balcony, we had white wicker chairs and a little white table in between them. And we looked out due west, which was great for the sunset. And between our hotel and the edge of the sea, there was about a mile and a half or so of land there that kind of overlooks the town. There were constant roosters, not just in the morning, multiple roosters. And there's also some traffic noise because we weren't that far from one of the main roads. Occasional barking dogs and shouts from a soccer field nearby. There were several soccer fields that we saw in this very small little town. So now you sort of have a view to imagine. And imagine it sunny and vibrant and beautiful, maybe even with a rainbow, because we did get one. We really did get a rainbow while drinking our coffee in the morning out on the balcony. This place is definitely a little paradise. And because we're imagining all of this, for those of you listening, get ready also to put on your hiking boots and to be driven all around the island by our superb guide, Tokerau, stopping and exploring at several sites to learn about the island and the moais. So here we go. I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Easter Island. Easter Island, it's an island in the middle of the Oceanic Pacific. Have 168 square kilometers. And all the formations we are looking around us is a volcanic formation. The first volcanoes started eruption 1 million years ago, and the island have more than 60 volcanoes around everywhere. It means every single hill you are looking around, it's a volcanic formation. Okay. The first people to came to the island, they came probably from Marquesas, from French Polynesia. Mm-hmm. Marquesas is the closer place from here, from this point to another piece of land. And the oldest marking of fire we have on the land and in the cemetery areas here and in the national park, it's marking 1,000 years ago. It means the first people probably came from other Polynesian islands, mm-hmm. and they did the first fire or the first civilization formed here 1,000 years ago is when the first people came. They travel in boats. They came with sugar cane, bananas, and things like that. The thing we have in front of us, it's a platform. It's a moai. This is the religion of the people on the island. The interesting thing of these statues, they are unique in the world. No exists another kind of moai like this in another part of the world. We have some similar things in other places, like some statues with hands putting on the belt, with similar shape, but nothing like a moai. The moais, they are unique. And the meaning of the statues on the island, it's they are tombstones. They are cemetery areas. When the people in the past here, they died, they put in tombs the body of the important people of the families, like leaders, kings, of owners of the clans. And they put the statues in the top of these tombs, like a tombstone. And they believed the statues, they are the protection of this person. Actually, the moai, it's a representation of this person. It's buried underneath of the statue. The people and the moai religion explain the spirit of the person when they put the moai on the top of the tomb, getting inside of the statue. And the moai, it's a representation of that person alive. It means, in simple words, the moais, they are a temple where the spirit of the important people lived before. And like this, they can watch and protect the village. That's why all the statues on the island, or most of them, they are facing inland.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is one of the representation. It means underneath of this statue, in this platform or structure with rocks, we have someone buried under. Mm-hmm. Okay. The statues, they don't have legs. They have just one big stomach, two hands putting on the belt, one face and one neck, not legs. They don't have a separation between this low part. Mm-hmm. It means the thing we are looking is the only thing it's forming by the statue. I mean, we don't have more things
right.
under.
There's nothing to...
Nothing under...
Dig out, yeah.
Dig out, exactly. Mm-hmm. The only place where we have moais buried under the ground, it's in the quarry, the place where they carved all the statues for all the places in all the platforms.
Okay.
And the quarry, it's one of the places we will visit these days.
Cool.
According to the facts, the families in the island, they had specialist works. They were specialties. They don't work. Not everyone's carved statues. Just one family did the statues. One family did the fishing, the farming, the tools, the ropes, the boats, the agriculture, and all of the work they did around the island. Okay, it means with a specialist work of families, everyone's need the work of the others. And like this, they did a circular economy when every family need the work of the other and they exchange food around them. And like this, they did a circular economy. Okay, we will getting deep on this topic these days we have, but this is like a small introduction.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's walk around the platform. Around the whole island, we have 1,050 statues in total. 1,050.
Wow.
We have 30% of the statues on platforms. We have another 36% of the statues in the quarry, in process to be finished, but they never moved them to another places. 20% of statues in transportation. And it means that if the Moais, they were in transportation, but when they stopped to did the Moai religion, just they leave them.
Okay.
Oh. Like abandon.
Yeah.
Also in the quarry, in the platforms, and in transportation. And we have some Moais around the world, in different museums around the world. In 1600 or around that time, the Moais, they were knocked down. The people here, they don't believe more in the spiritual protection the statues represent, and they knocked down them. It means if we are looking Moais standing up, this is a restoration.
Oh, okay.
30 years ago, 20 years ago, the first restoration, it was in 1960. Like 50 years ago. That was the first restoration. Every place where we will go, except the quarry, if you see Moais standing up in platforms, that's a restoration. That's why we can see the cement in the bottom or the line of the neck.
Yeah.
It's because they were knocked down by some problems we had in 1600. Also, I will go deep on these details later. They put metal instructions, cement, and they're standing up again, the Moai. They don't carve more. The statue is just like it was before. Just they put pieces together, and they're standing up in the place where they were. Okay, when they knocked down the statues, the Moai just did that. This, you know, and they just fix them and standing up again.
Okay.
We are still looking the same kind of village the first people did before. In a line of time, if we can divide the history of the island, like I said before, we have 1,000 years of time. The first people came here in 900 after Christ, the people probably from other Polynesian islands. The first Moais, or the first platforms, they built here with the statues on the top of them, according to the carbon marking, it's 1,200. And the last Moais they carve, according to the platforms and the cemetery areas and the studies of the in the bones they put under the statues, is in 1600. It means we have a time of around 400 years of time when they did these 1,050 statues. In transportation, in the quarry, in just one volcano where they did all of them, and other Moais in platforms. All of them for the same meaning, is spiritual protection.
For one person?
For one person, one Moai.
Wow.
It's a lot of work just to represent one person.
And like, what was the population?
At the beginning, the first people they came here, it was a group of probably 300 people, three boats.
Okay.
And then they getting bigger, and in the best time, like probably 1500, okay, before the first Europeans they came, 1400, it was a population of 15,000 or 20,000 of people. It's hard to know exactly how much, but it was more than 15,000 for sure. Yeah, we have platforms with 15 Moais, platforms with 7 Moais, platforms with 4 Moais, some places with three platforms with different numbers of statues. It was depends of the resources and the how powerful it was the clan. If the clan had a lot of resources, a lot of workers, and makes a lot of money or food, they can pay for many platforms and makes more spiritual protection for his area.
Okay.
It means more platforms and more moais represent more power and more status between the clans. All of them, they had a monarchy when the king family was the biggest authority. And the king family had the connection with the god, Makemake. And he select and he divide the families with leaders on all of this group of people. According to the legends, the god Makemake tell to the set for the king who is a leader and who will be the leader of every clan. It was like a vision or a premonition coming from the god to the king and from the king to the other group of people. Like the king, it was the representation of the god. And we can see the statue here. They are facing the land. Probably it means the people, they were lived on this area. Mm-hmm. And we can see his nose, his lips, his two hands putting on the belt. And the holes. Well, it's broken in his head, but the holes in the eyes.
Does it suggest that, the person who was buried there was also powerful and influential, or just that this village had the resources and so when somebody died, they would make them more?
The most important person of the families, when they die, they have the privilege to have this.
Got it.
The other people, when they die, the normal ones, they cremate, they burn. Also, they reuse the bones of them for hogs or different ornaments. They don't have metal. It means they reuse the bones. They cremate the bones, the bodies. Also, they bury it in inland in cemetery areas, but not important like this. I mean, this is the protection for the clan. Yes. And this, it's for the king of the clan, you know, the most powerful one. Like Egypt, they put his pharaohs in pyramids.
Yeah.
Same idea with the Moais. The Moais, it was for the just the most important people of the families and the clans. In the they were at the beginning seven different clans, and then in the best time of the island they were 12 different specialties, clans and families. They had platforms with statues and moai, and around the island we have 297 platforms. 297 platforms with the statues on one of them. It means every clan, they have more than 20 platforms. If we look one platform and another platform separate of that one, it's not two different clans here. It's the same clan area and they built two platforms, okay? Because every clan had like 20 or probably more if it's 297 platforms. All of them in the coast, with the statues facing in. All of these small hills, they are volcanoes, and all of them, they are inactive. We don't have magma or lava underground. Don't worry.
Extinct?
Will... Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because the tectonic plaques of the island, they are two, the Nazca and the continental tectonic plaque, and they are pushing each other. It means one is below the other, and when the magma go up to the surface and form these volcanoes. That was 1,000 years ago, okay? With the time of 1,000 years of time, these points of magma, they move. And they move to more far away around the ocean. That's why we are looking the view of the volcanoes, but it's nothing of life of magma under. You know, we don't have magma, it's just the volcanoes, you know,
just
with
the shape
holes.
Was left.
Just the show, exactly.
Yeah.
The shape left.
We'll come right back to that. But first, let's thank the brands that support our show. Once upon a time in 2015, I set out with my trusty Osprey Fairview 55 travel pack and did not come back for, about 3 years. That entire time, I traveled the world nomadically with my Fairview 55. It was the first Osprey pack I fell in love with, and the Farpoint Fairview line has only gotten better over the years. And Osprey has just come out with a brand new updated version of the Farpoint and Fairview travel packs in 40 liter, 55, and 70, and they are exclusively available now at Osprey.com and at REI. My two favorite features of the Farpoint Fairview travel packs are that they open like a suitcase, so much room for activities and packing cubes, and that they have detachable day packs built into the 55 and 70. These packs all include Blue Sign approved 100% recycled materials and will hold up beautifully for weeks or, if you're like me, months and months of travel. And if you need more space, they pair gloriously with the Transporter Wheeled Duffel, which is my go-to for absolutely everything now. Can't stop, won't stop. I love it. Find the new Farpoint and Fairview travel packs, plus all the travel packing accessories you need, plus the beautiful Transporter Wheeled Duffels, and join me in my adventure packing bliss at Osprey.com. Hiking and hitting the trails is a year-round adventure opportunity, even in the snow. It just means you need the right gear, and no one knows this better than Oboz Footwear, because they hail from the often cold and snowy mountains of Bozeman, Montana. I once took a pair of waterproof insulated Oboz boots on a winter trip to Canada where I went snowmobiling, dog sledding, ice fishing, ski hawking, that's a special thing in Quebec, snowshoeing, and fat tire biking, and I did it all in my one pair of Oboz adventure boots. It was the easiest shoe packing solution I've ever experienced on a trip, and my feet were warm and dry and so comfortable the entire time. I want this kind of winter adventure success for you and your feet too. So check out Oboz Footwear's full line of insulated, rugged hikers and winter boots that will keep your feet happy from town to trail. Oh, and remember that every pair of footwear you get from Oboz helps plant trees. Learn more at obozfootwear.com/lovehiking. And thank you, wherever you are, for listening to the show and supporting these brands that help make it possible.
So, Marquesas, how far away is that? How isolated are we?
2,500 kilometers.
2,500 kilometers. And that's around the closest?
That's the closer piece of land human people living. We have other islands like 500
but
kilometers.
But they're uninhabited.
But they are uninhabited. Yeah, okay. It's for scientists' studies and not human people. We know they lived there. It's Marquesas. It's one of the closer ones west on that direction.
Yeah. Towards New Zealand.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chile is 3,800 kilometers.
Away.
Yeah. 5 hours in plane.
We are quite alone out here.
Yeah. Very isolated. It means the first sailors, they did a huge and interesting work to found this place, you know? Yeah. We have some theories how they found the island and how they are here, you know, when they did this kind of work so isolated and with not helps from other civilizations. Like Egypt, they have more Mesopotamians people helping them. They have the Nile River, thousands of people. This was a few group of people isolated from everywhere with a lot of resources here, but with not help coming from other places where they can copy or see something similar. Not metal, not technology, not electricity. And the biggest statue have 22 meters. It's more than 100 tons. Megalithic pieces of rocks. And it's proving they moved them. I mean, it's the proof is there.
Right, because they came from the quarry.
Exactly.
And they moved them.
From the quarry is the only volcano in the whole island with one specific type of rock. Mm-hmm. All of the statues, they made it with that kind of rock. Like we have 60 volcanoes, but the quarry is the only one with ash rock. And we have moais around the whole island with ash rock.
Uh-huh.
But it's not like this is another volcano. Let's carve a moai and move a kilometer, meters there. Because the quarry, where is that kind of rock carving the moai, it's kilometers far away. It means they really moved them. We don't know when they carved the statues 100% because it's impossible to know when someone makes a carving on a rock. But we study the fires and the DNA of the bones, it was under the mm-hmm. statues, you know. Mm-hmm. When they create the platforms, they burn the grass. And all of these platforms, they have an a meter and a half deep, or someone's more or less, a line of carbon. That was the first things they did before to build the platform, is burn the grass. Huh. And that carbon we know, and we mark it, and that's why I can tell you the centuries. But that's estimated by the platforms, you know, not the statues. The idea, they carve the statue on the quarry. In the quarry, they transport the statue from the quarry to this place with another clan, another specific group of workers. Not everyone's move statues, like I said before. They move the statue and they put the statue on the platform, not crowned yet, just the moai on the platform. And the last things they did in the ceremony, it's carve holes in the eyes part, in this part. The moais they were carving in the quarry, in the nursery of them, they have flat areas in the eyes. They don't have holes. Okay? It means all of the moais they were in the quarry or in transportation, they don't have holes in the eyes, just flat. Okay? When they put the moai on the platform, they carve holes on them. They went to the ocean, take blocks of coral from the ocean. They carve wide shape of ice with red stone in the top, in the middle, like the iris, or sometimes it was obsidian.
Obsidian,
yeah. And they take the coral ice and they put the ice on the statue when the statue was on the platform. According to the oral tradition, at that moment, when they put the eyes on the statue, the spirit of the person it was on the tomb getting in on the moai, and the moai breathe for first time. It means he is alive now. Like when you are born, you open your eyes, you are alive. Mm-hmm. Same idea of the moai. The moai is not alive on the quarry. It's not alive when it was in transportation. The moai is representing a spiritual protection where it was on the platform with the eyes on him. Okay? When he had the eyes, the spirit of the person getting in, and he's a representation of that person now. He's the temple alive. But before of that, it's just a piece of rock. An important piece of rock, because will be a representation of a person, but it's not alive yet, except when have the eyes. That's why all of the statues we have in platforms, they have holes, not coralized. Coral disintegrate very fast in 10 years outside is by erosion disappear. Imagine these things were carving according to the facts in 600 years ago.
Right.
No coralized exists.
Right.
We found one real coral ice of one moai in Anakena Beach covered by white sand. That's why the ice doesn't disintegrate, because it was covered and protected by white sand. And that's why we know the statues, they have ice.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was in 1953 by one archaeologist, is called Sergio Rapu, when they did the restoration in one of the platforms in Anakena Beach, the only beach with white sand. When they were taking the statues and putting standing up again, they found pieces of coral where they putting together and form an ice.
Wow.
And why we have one moai with coral ice on him? It's because we put that ice in 2010 when the Chilean government gave us the national park for the Rapa Nui people. Before, 15 years ago, the Chilean government protect the national park.
Mm-hmm.
But we did a protest.
Yeah.
We protest. We did our organization. It's called Mauhenua, just made it by Rapa Nui local people. And the Chilean government give us the access for the national park. And it's, yeah, sorry.
Gracias.
Yeah. Bless you. Bless
Gracias.
You. And when the president at that time, it was a woman, Michelle Bachelet.
Yeah.
She gave us the national park. We, like a representation, we put coral ice on this moai. Like now we can protect our own national park, and it's a representation of, in a concept.
Yeah.
like the things was happening at that time. Yeah. That's why it's not real coming from the ancient time. Right. But we have one replica of one real ice. And then when we found that ice in Anakena Beach, not me, but the archaeologists, all the Rapa Nui, they realized the Moai, they had ice, and they had the ice just when the Moai was on the platform. Because the only Moai carving with holes, it's on the platforms, not in transportation and in the quarry. It means that was an interesting and a strong fact to give us the idea about the life. They were very superstitious. I mean, the Rapa Nui people, they don't carve these Moais and these, they don't move and use all his time to move these huge pieces of rock because they know in 1,000 years more, me and the other people will make tours and make dollars with that. They don't need to be famous and think about all the world will know about the Rapa Nui people for his work. They did that because they really believed the statues, they represent protection. It means it's very interesting, you know, to think about, and also so isolated from everywhere. You know, they don't did that work to be famous because probably in one point of the history, they believed they were the only people in the world. Imagine the expeditions in one point when they go out thousands of kilometers or hundreds of kilometers far away and people never came back. Mm-hmm. You know, after 100 years to searching island around and don't found nothing, you start to think like, you know, we are pretty far away from everywhere. Yeah. It means it's an interesting point. And yeah, that's why we put this coral ice on the statue. And this is also a restoration did by William Malloy. William Malloy, it's an anthropologist from US. He did the restoration of 6 and 7 platforms around the whole island. He did the first restoration in 1960, actually. His mission, it was to standing up all the statues in platforms around the whole island. He did a few of them and then he died. But all of that work free for us. We don't pay him. The community helps, but he did that work free. And also, if he was archaeologist, if he found something, he will be the famous, mm-hmm. you know, like, mm-hmm. and people don't know too much about the meaning and all of the history we know now by technology. Mm-hmm. Before it was a big mystery. It means it was a treasure for archaeologists come here and excavate under these things, you know, what is the representation of these huge monuments. Okay, like I said yesterday, all the statues, the 297 platforms with people buried on their knees of the statues, they are on the platforms, they are in the coast because they represent protection. In the past, the leader, it's living inside of the statue, the spirit of the leader. Remember when they put the coral ice, the spirit getting in on the Moai, and the Moai is him facing and looking the village. Mm-hmm. If he bring protection, he need to watch the village. That's why the statues, they are facing in, because they watch the village, they bring prosperity, fertility, and good weather for the next season of farming, fishing, and planting trees for wood and resources and different elements to create the economy for the whole island. It means the statues, in simple words, they are spiritual protection. From where? From the highest society, from the most royalty and most important people. They take the decisions for all of the community, dividing specific clans. You got it? Yeah.
Yeah.
From this, these 297 platforms, they are around the coastline. The only one inland with the statues facing out is this place where we are now. It's called Ahu Akivi or Ahu Atiu. Ahu means platform, an ancestral cemetery area, Ahu. And Akivi will be the name of the place or the clan or depends of the place where we are. For example, Ahu Tahai, the platform we saw yesterday. Mm-hmm. Ahu Akivi, the 7 statues. Ahu Tongariki, the 15 statues. and other ones. Ahu Akahanga, you have many different names, but Ahu means the platform where we are looking. And these rounded stones we have in front is part of the platform, and that's the statues, they are on the top. But why this platform is different than the others? Why they put 7 statues facing outside? If all of the statues around the island, they are not inland, they are in the coastline and facing in, okay? Have a meaning and an answer, okay? I will tell you where we will go and walk.
Okay.
Wait for us after commercials. Lace, the best sweet potatoes.
Stop
from
it.
Snickers. You can, no, oh, do you cannot say.
How about your Astro Tours?
Okay. Take Astro Tours in Easter Island.
Toques Astro
Tours. Talk it out. Yeah. Include whiskey, wine, and telescopes.
That's right. Well, now you have to.
I need to make the people getting entrance. I cannot tell the secret of the 7 at the first moment, right?
Right. You gotta keep the
Yeah. This platform have a, this is not joke. this platform have a alignment with the constellation and the stars.
Ooh, that's cool.
Okay. Thank you. I have fans in the audience. And the, what is the alignment? In the past, the people used the longest day, the shortest day of the year, or the middle of the year, using the stars constellations. They came here traveling. They found the island using the stars. When they rise and set, it means they know around 220 different kind of constellation and stars in the horizon. It means just looking some stars they can see in the night sky. They know where is north, south, yep. Where is the constellation coming. They have that knowledge because they use it for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. The first people start to navigate in the oceanic continent 5,000 years ago, okay, from Asia. In 2010, a group of anthropologists did a DNA study for people from Micronesia, the west part of the oceanic continent, Melanesia and Polynesia, the three parts they conform the oceanic continent, and they found more than 0.5% from Taiwan in our DNA. Because some people say, no, you come from Norway, because Moais have red stones in the top, they were people with the red, you know, like Vikings. Sure. Oh, no, you come from Vikings because you have similar catamaran boats. You come from South America because you build similar platforms. Then the DNA study and the most important fact we have is the blood said we come from Asia. And you cannot fight with that argument. It's like bloodline, you know, it's like the stronger things we have. It means the Polynesian people and all the people, they come from this island, Hawaii, all of the islands around the whole continent, started navigate from Asia in the year 3000 before Christ, 5,000 years ago. And all of these people, they were the biggest colonized group of people in the world. They found more place than any other civilization just using the stars. If we take all the space they take, navigate and follow the stars, is like Russia and China together. All of this area, it's founded by them just with the stars. It means when the first people came here, they know about the stars. Of course they need to know. They have 1,000 years of knowledge of the stars. Have make sense when they build this huge monument, all of this work for 50 or 100 years of work, just working with rocks, they need to put it in a specific place, you know, marking something. And they use the stars like calendars, like the longest day when it starts the winter time, in the shortest day when it starts the rain. And they use the platforms like calendars, like this, they can mark things during the year. What is the mark, with all of this introduction, what is the marking of this platform specifically? 23 of September, when start the equinox, the half day, the day have 12 hours at night and 12 hours at the day. Okay, just that day is the half It's the only day with 12 hours at night and 12 hours at the day. And the Orion Belt rise in the middle of this platform just that day. The next day, moving a little bit and moving a little bit. And then
that's cool.
Move again, mark the half of the year, and then move again. Exactly, spring season, spring equinox. It means this platform is not just special because they are facing the ocean. Also, it's special because have a alignment with the day of the half of the year. Okay, and specifically the Orion Belt, it's down in that direction that night when the platform is facing, just in the middle. If you look behind, west, yes.
Like due west, like straight west.
Straight west, correct. Straight west, exactly. It's marking specifically that point, just that night.
Just that night.
Just that night. And this is one of the more than 10 platforms we have around the whole island. They are marking with the longest day, with the sunrise, sunset, like Machu Picchu, Stonehenge. Many civilizations, they did the same in the past.
Yep.
This is not just from us, but it's something also interesting.
I love it.
Follow us for more. In the past, when the disease and the first contact with Europeans makes the people die here, the people don't believe more in the spiritual protection the statues represent, and they start to die. They start to cut all the trees and start a war period, a civil war. A moment when the clans, they fight each other and they don't believe more in this protection and they knock down the statues. It means if we are looking wise standing up, it's because this is a
restoration.
Restoration. There you are. And they are standing up. It means they have cement inside and they were knocked down.
Okay.
This is the first restoration of the island by William Malloy in 1960. Oh, the first in the whole island. In a line of time, we can say the beginning, 900 after Christ, the first Polynesian people, they came here. 1200, the first statues carving. The last statues, 1600. 1600, first contact with boats and disease and bad things coming from out. Makes the war. Probably the war take 10 years. We don't know exactly, but no more than 10 years. You are in a small island. I mean, where you can go? They kill a lot of people. More than half of the population die during the war. And the statues, they lost the power and they lost the hope in the spiritual protection. They knocked down them. Mm-hmm. After that, the Birdman.
Yeah.
After the Birdman, Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
After Catholicism, restoration. Restoration, tourism.
Yeah.
Total 1,000 years. We will go talking about to these days about these topics. But this is like in general sense, the whole line of time. Because I talk about war, Moais, religion, and I think sometimes can be a little bit like confused. And the line of time works to understand the age, the different age of the island. And that's the cement put in by William Malloy. In the neck, you can see the cement. According to the legends at the beginning, these seven statues, they are representing the first seven explorers. They found the island for first time. That's why they are facing out, and they are faces to the ocean, because we come from out. And they are the only ones, they know where we come from. That's why the seven statues, they are in separate area. They are not in the coast. They don't represent a spiritual protection. They are a representation of the first seven explorers. They came for first time on the island. How the seven explorers, they found this place? According to the oral tradition legend, exists one king living in Hiva. Hiva, it was another island, probably in French Polynesia, probably closer Marquesas. Can be. It's around that area. We believe that because the only place with Hiva name on the oceanic continent is Marquesas, the closer place from here. It means have makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If we have the same name on the legend, and it's the closer place from here, they can travel from there.
Mm-hmm.
They call Marquesas like Nuku Hiva, Fatu Hiva, or Hiva Oa. Okay, but also they have the Hiva word. It means can be from there. The thing is, Hotumatua had a premonition, and he saw how big tsunamis kill all his kingdom. And in the vision, he escaped his soul, go out of his body, and travel to search a place where he can stay and take all his kingdom to be safe. In this vision, he was traveling with Haumaka, with a spirit. And the spirit showed him where is the way, where they need to go. Follow sunrise, going straight to east. Mm-hmm. When he wake up, he prepared the best seven explorers, the best seven sailors, and he sent them. They go out, they search the island, follow the sunrise. They found this place, and six of them tell to one, go, come back to the land of our king, and tell him we found the land he set. Mm-hmm. And we will be here preparing the land for him, planting sweet potatoes, planting sugar cane, preparing, you know, all the land. Then he came back to talk with the king, and from there, they moved to here in 10th century. Okay. Half makes sense, this legend, because we were talking about the glaciation. Remember the inundation yesterday about how in 10th century happened one glaciation in the world, and many islands in Polynesia, they disappear. And then happened 100 years of time, they build the Moai religion, they divide the the clans in specific areas. And then in one moment, not Hotumatua, not the first king for sure, another king, he decide to honor the seven explorers, and they build this monument.
This one. Okay.
For the representation of the explorers. If you look straight north, it's Mexico. You see there? Oh. It's Mexico.
Mexico straight
south,
north of us.
Antarctica.
Yeah.
East, Chile. But where the statues they are looking?
West.
Polynesian Islands, Marquesas. That's why we believe they come from there.
Okay. All of that makes sense.
Why they don't have crowns? Because the seven explorers, they were not leaders. You see, it's not crowns here. Not redstone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They were explorers.
Right.
The Quarry of the Crowns, on the top of this area, they carve the redstone, okay? We call this, for this kind of rock, foam stone, because it's very light. And when the eruptions of this volcano started, the magma mixed with a lot of gases. More than half of the structure of the stone is gases than lava. It means it's very light and have a lot of holes because it's a lot of bubbles forming by the gases. And the biggest mineral we have mixed with the magma, it was iron. That's why it's red.
Okay.
That's why it's red. Like I said yesterday, we have 90 crowns and 1,050 statues. It means probably it's a recently work because just it's a small group of number of these crowns. Okay. It's the last part of decoration, the Moai's platforms and statues they have. How they move them? In all of the trails of transportation where we have lines of crowns in transportation, they are in horizontal. They are not in vertical position. It means they roll them. Mm-hmm. The crown is a wheel. They have a small top knot in the top. I don't know if you saw that yesterday.
Yeah.
Here they don't have, because the top knot was carving when the crown, it was on the top of the statue, because the foam stone broke faster and easily. That's why they move just the big piece of rock. And when the crown is on the platform, on the place where will be on the top of the statue, they carve the last details when it was on the top to not damage the stone in the transportation and when they put the crown on the top. The crowns, they have some lines carving in the corner, some one of them. Most of them, the crowns, they have these kind of lines. They were in transportation or in process to be on the top of the statue. It means they use the crown, the lines to keep the ropes. If it's a round thing, they can use to move them or manipulate the crown using ropes between them because it's rounded. It's really hard to have control of that. The biggest crown moving in a platform is 10 tons, 13 kilometers from here. In another platforms is in the west coast. And that one is probably 9 tons. The small ones, they have 2 or 3 tons, still huge pieces of rock. transportation, the heavy weight of the statue is in his stomach. It means they were balanced like a refrigerator when you move, like a wibble wobble.
Yeah, bottom heavy.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And four group of people, two groups here with ropes in the shoulders, and one group with the ropes in the stomach. Mm-hmm. Like this, they balance the Moai, and when the Moai is in his zero gravity point, they turn around. And then again, okay, they balance and they turn around, and the Moai can walk to the platform. The interesting thing here, all the statues, they are very small, of first generation, much older. They are here around break. And all the big ones, they are standing up or in process to be transported. It means that that proves us also, they learn from the small generations, the first generation of Moais, how transport, and then they replicate in a big scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, if they transport them on this balance, you know, the Moai need to have a heavy weight on the bottom. This big one is flat. You see, it means in sense of transportation, will be really hard to transport this Moai standing up. That's why sometimes I believe this big Moai here is just an example of how the master carver, they work. And if they need to sell his models for the other clans, to the other clans buy them, they need a showroom. They need
a showroom.
They need a place where they are showing his work. Mm. If you buy a car, you need to see the examples. Like, and that's why also I believe some wise here, they never be finished carving on the on this area to represent someone. Sometimes it's just to represent the work of the master carvers. But that is the thing that I think about this kind of theories, okay?
Yeah.
Can be because we have places where we can see path of Moais in line, going in some direction, falling in line. They use path. But it's a lot of work to getting flat the path. They don't have metal to getting flat the area. It means it's a lot of work, just in 400 years of time. That's why the argument for that reason is they were specialties.
Yeah.
If everyone did the statues or carve statues or move statues, they will take 1,000 years to did 1,050. And they just take 400 years. It means specialties, you know.
There was a group that focused on transportation.
On just carve, just transportation, just tools, just fish, just farm.
Circular economy.
Astronomy. There you are.
Yeah.
You got it.
I was listening.
Yes, yes, yes. But still, we have a small portion, 0.1%, we don't know exactly. Like, can happen, can be something different coming from outside. And I cannot say this is the truth. I just show you the arguments I consider it. They are important to know.
Were the Moais carved to look like the person they were supposed to represent?
This is a good question.
So, like, did this guy have a really big nose?
Before, in the past, all the people looked kind similar. But where is the important or not on the person? It's how big is the Moai. More big Moai, better details, more recently work, better model of a statue, much better carving. Small statues, more square. Not too much details because it's not really expensive. It means more than how they look like the Moai, is how big is the Moai. If the Moai is big, you are paying a lot, he will do a good job. Similar than your face, probably with your elements in your face and chin and ears and nose. But if you are paid for a small one, don't wait for something similar than you, because it's just a small generation.
Mm-hmm.
It means more than how it looks like, is how big is the Moai.
Yeah.
That's why the biggest Moai, last generation, better details. More expensive work, of course.
He's saying size matters.
Oh, yeah. Science matters, for sure, in the Moai religion. What do you think about science matters?
We agree.
You agree. There you are. Okay. We are talking about Moais, right?
Of course.
Okay.
Obviously.
Yeah. You can... Well, it's part of your podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not taking that up.
Yeah.
Okay, I really hope you enjoyed getting a bit of a tour of Easter Island today, getting to know what the Moais are. I'd love to hear what you think. You can leave a comment on Spotify or send me a message on Instagram at Traveling Jackie. And remember to check out ecochile.travel. That's ECOCHILE, ecochile.travel. Their contact is also in the show notes as well. And if you end up traveling with them, I would love to hear where you're going. And be sure to tell them that Traveling Jackie sent you so that you can get the 5% off of your final itinerary cost. And I have one more bonus for you. I know that you've learned a lot about, well, I hope that you've learned a lot about Easter Island in this episode, but I have saved my favorite and most interesting part of what we found on this island for the next episode. So be sure to tune in to episode 196 as well to find out what the best part of Easter Island was for me. So thank you so much for tuning in today, and we'll see you in the next one.